all things sexual.
Thanks for tuning into the Shame Free Zone. My guest tonight is Annie Sprinkle. She's an author, a scholar, a performer, an artist, an outspoken activist, and she began her career as a porn star and a pinup model. She worked for 20 years in Manhattan, both in porn and prostitution. In the early 80s, she became a performance artist and later toured internationally with acclaimed one-woman shows. Her seminal solo show, Post-Porn Modernist, featured the infamous public cervix announcement, in which the audience was invited to individually view her cervix using a speculum and a flashlight. Believe it or not, this piece is now required study at many universities. In 2002, Sprinkle received her PhD, making her a certified sexologist and the very first porn star to earn that honor. Her book, Dr. Sprinkle's Spectacular Sex Makeover, Your Love Life, was published by Penguin, and her DVD film diary, Annie Sprinkle's History of Porn, is now available. You can visit for more information and to purchase these DVDs and the books at anniesprinkle.org. And she also has a website featuring her latest performance piece, which is called the Love Art Laboratory, and that's over at loveartlab.org. Annie, welcome to the show.
Thank you. What an eloquent introduction. Thank you.
Well, I'm a big fan, my dear.
Well, likewise. I'm a big fan of yours.
Now, I know you hate public accolades, and but I am going to say something here that just blew me away. I happen to be also a fan of a show on Showtime called Weeds, which has been on the air for about 4 years now, and the heroine of that show, her name is Nancy Botts. I guess that's the show that she is playing, the character that she plays. She was Nancy Botts one. She was having a conversation with her sons, her two sons, about sex. Mm-hmm. And here's a quote from the show. "Sex is good," Freud said, or Annie Sprinkle maybe said, "Sex is great and you should have sex safely."
A few people emailed me that happened. I didn't see the show, but...
Oh, it's cool. It's cool. You are officially in the same ranks as Freud now.
Who knew that working at the Pink Pussycat would lead to that? But the girls could see me now.
Well, they probably are. They have probably been following your career the whole time.
I don't know, but it's been quite a journey, and this journey continues.
Well, you just got back from Canada?
Yes, I do visiting artist presentations. In other words, I go places and I talk about my life and work. And so this lovely gallery in Newfoundland, St. John's, invited me to come, so I jumped on the plane. It took all day, and then did my lecture and jumped on the plane back and took another day. And Beth got a standing ovation, and so they appreciated it, which was very nice. And people were darling there. So it was a good trip.
So
a long
presentation, was this a Love Art Lab that you were presenting?
No, actually, sometimes I do... do go with my partner and collaborator, Elizabeth Stevens.
And your wife?
Yeah, and the Love Art Lab is a project, it's a 50-50 collaboration between the two of us. So we have a website that's kind of the virtual home of our project where we put up our documentation. And so sometimes we do talks together, but I still get demand for the... talk about the older work. So
that you were actually up in Canada talking about some of the older work.
Yeah. I start with the old porn from the 70s, and you know, people love that old porn.
Well, yeah, because so much of what's out there now is just crud compared to that.
I don't know. I haven't seen all that much current stuff, but
well, there's no storyline or acting, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's funny, but I just hung out a bit with Tiss and Tormino, for example, and, you know, she's doing some really good work, and Candida Royale's doing great work, and Monica Hart, and...
Were they all there?
No, but I just have been following the work they've been doing, and
yeah,
they're doing some nice stuff.
Absolutely. You went to Spain with Beth to do the Love Art Lab, right?
Yes, we were invited to San Sebastian, this beautiful Spanish town. There was an amazing conference put on by a lovely academic, really cool academic, named Beatriz Preciado, and she put together a conference called Feminismo Punk Porno. And it was about, it's become called post-porn, which is a term I actually invented, post-porn. Post-porn modernist porn, which is porn that's more arty or eclectic or experimental, conceptual. So there were all these young Spanish artists that were performing and talking about their work, and it was really great. And Beth and I were kind of the headliners.
How does that feel to show up in a country on the other side of the globe and see that you've had this influence on the performance artists and pornographers of the future?
Well, it kind of blows my mind. Especially, I really like that people are using the term post-porn, which actually there really is no post-porn, but it's really kind of caught on, and there was a conference called Post-Porn Politics, and I'm sort of known as the mother of post-porn. And so all these young people are, some older or middle-aged, doing what they call post-porn, and it's just really cool to be, like, acknowledged as a pioneer for that. But I learned so much from them. You know, one of the women did, her name's Porno Terrorist. She did a performance that was so heavy and provocative and shocking. I was like, whoa. It really made me think and feel. And I was like, whoa. You know, I wasn't sure how I felt about it. Because she mixed a lot of, like, real violence in with SM. And
right.
It was really heavy. And so I like to be, you know, surprised and see things I've never seen before. And these young women are, and trans people, for that matter, a lot of trans people are post-porn. So it's pretty cool. It's really nice to feel like I've pioneered new genres. And I feel like the work I'm doing with Beth now is... it's just kind of a next phase. It's not so pornographic, but it's we use, you know, our bodies and sexually oriented imagery, but it's more about love, which is really challenging. Sex is a lot easier than love. Love is a really tricky subject.
Now, how do you define those two?
Sex and love?
Yeah. Most people assume they know what that means, but actually it's interesting with some of the workshops and lectures I do, people actually can't agree on that. I'm just wondering how you define the two.
Well, I think there are many kinds of love. But the trick is, what we're trying to explore is love that's not from like a Hallmark. It's not Valentine's Day, it's kind of a deeper kind of love. Of course, it is a romantic love or relationship love or... You know, when I had a couple things happen to me, like a houseboat fire and a breast cancer experience, which I'm fine now, but, you know, so much love came at me that it changed me because it was like a big heart orgasm. It was so satisfying and beautiful and profound.
How did the love come to you? Was it an email, phone calls, or could you just feel the energy or the prayers? Or
yeah, well, with the fire, people I didn't know, porn fans, old Johns, Lots of people just sent me money.
Wow.
There are a few people posted, you know, that I didn't have insurance and I lost everything, and they just, I wasn't asking for money, but, and there were benefits, about 20 benefits, and there was a benefit in San Francisco where it was 9 hours of performances, and all these people came and really just honored me with their work, and I was just, you know, it was like a big pillow, this big fuzzy pillow that cushioned everything, and it's ecstatic, it's blissful, and what I was surprised is how physical it was. You know, love is kind of, you know, it's like you think of love like family love or something, but when you get this kind of intense community love and all these people supporting you, it's like very physical. It's a real high. It's like doing drugs or something. I found it very physical in the way that sex is physical. You know,
yes.
Or erotic. Erotic can be, you know, you cannot be even touching someone, but you feel this rush of good feelings, arousal, so it's kind of love arousal.
I've been working around that idea with my, you know, how sex can solve global warming lecture.
Yeah, tell us about that. That's fascinating.
Well, I have kind of hit up against a place where I need to go deeper, and you really just brought that out. I mean, the whole idea that love and sex both seem to tap into this same energetic field. And certainly, I mean, the only connection or bridge that I have found between these two concepts is, you know, Tantra, which can be tantric meditation or it can be tantric sex. And the more I experiment with those two, the more I start to feel like they are so intertwined. I wonder why we try to make them separate or different. But, I mean, I really started to wonder if the love, the sex, the creativity, procreation, that all of those things are like this one big ball of super positive energy.
Yeah, that's great. Well, certainly creativity... Beth and I did this project where we have these big performance art weddings, and they are big love fests because we ask for no gifts, but we ask people to help create the wedding. So the last one, we had 160 people help create the wedding, and 400 people attended, and it was out in the Redwoods, and it was this glorious love fest, and people got really high. But it was like having sex. It was this creative orgasm. After the wedding, I said, God, that was the like best orgasm. You know, just like when it works conceptually and energetically, and when you really it said something that you wanted to say and people heard it creatively, it's totally orgasmic.
You know, it's a risk of sounding kind of banal here. It makes me think of my dog.
Your dog?
Because when my dog is all excited about the fact that we're going to go take a walk, he usually gets an erection.
Oh, yes.
So for him, there's like no separation between being sexually aroused and being excited about taking a walk.
My dog gets his erection when we get in the car. I love that.
It's like, you know, we've obviously been taught that we need to have these real strict boundaries between what's sex, what isn't sex. But I just think it's interesting that in nature it seems like it's all kind of just this long continuum.
Yeah, you know, as a prostitute, I saw a lot of guys that had been in the wars and Vietnam or other wars. And I was very curious, you know, about their experience. And several of them told me that they would get erections, you know, in dangerous situations or when they were actually killing, which, you know, that really made me think that, I mean, obviously the adrenaline gave them an erection, but kind of made me think how war, you know, sex and war are connected. You know, like if, you know, all these guys are getting erections in wars, I'm not saying they all do, but then
it's actually been pretty well documented that it's a pretty common occurrence.
Yeah, and penetrating each other with bullets or knives or whatever, it is quite a long continuum.
Yeah, and then what does that have to do with love?
Yeah.
No. So you are, to me, I'm in awe of you because of the disparate things that you bring into play, or they seem disparate, but mm-hmm. like your Love Art Lab incorporated the breast cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, for a lot of people, that would have gone into the disease box.
We eroticized everything.
You eroticized it, and you also, you know, created love around it. Can you tell us more about that?
We actually had a really good time with the breast cancer, you know. And my motto is kind of eroticize everything, including root canals. But I had an early stage breast cancer, so I was able to enjoy the experience because it wasn't like, you know, it was life-threatening, but it wasn't really life-threatening. So we dressed up in costumes for chemo. And those pictures are our website. It's called the Chemo Fashion Show. And then when my hair started falling out, we got David Steinberg, a wonderful photographer who's making beautiful photos of you.
My absolute favorite photographer in the whole world.
Really?
Yes.
He's great.
And I worked with people from, you know, photographers from People magazine, so. And he's the best as far as I'm
concerned. He really lets people be themselves. So I said, David, would you photograph us shaving each other's head and making love? And we shaved each other's pussies and we fisted each other and all this. And we call it erotica. So here I was on chemo and we just had fun with it. And, you know, it was very moving. And I really liked the idea of, you know, I mean, young people are beautiful and that young, youthful sex is gorgeous. But there's something about going through a very difficult situation and being there for each other and the depth of love, you know, where you're vulnerable and open-hearted, and that I find erotic. You know, I always get kind of turned on in hospital or, you know, in situations where I'm not really supposed to be turned on, like religious, you know, services and things.
Oh, they're getting turned on, too, I've decided.
What?
I've decided that the people who go to church, that's just a sex substitute.
Mm.
I think that's why mainstream religion is so down on sex, because not because it's antithetical, but because it's competition.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, especially, like, my grandmother was a holy roller. She came from Assembly of God, you know, where they speaking in tongues.
Mm-hmm.
And some of that phenomena is related to what they call kriyas, which is, you know, spontaneous muscular contractions that come out of meditation practice, or tantra especially. Mm-hmm. But I started seeing connections, actually, between these ecstatic religious experiences and sex, where I don't think they're that much different.
Like kundalini orgasm and born-again experience.
Exactly.
Kind of the same.
They're just going to church for their orgasms, that's all.
Yeah, I had a neighbor who was born again Christian, and she took me, and they were gospel singing up a storm, and I was like in ecstasy.
Yeah.
And I'm not particularly religious, but I really enjoy, I like ritual, and I like energy, you know.
I do too.
So,
I do too. A bunch of us a couple of years ago went up to a church in Oakland to celebrate the Day of Remembrance, you know, on December 17th for sex workers who have been murdered.
Right.
And we all wore black, and we all carried red umbrellas, and we went to this Oakland church, and the part that was unexpected, because we were there to make a statement, you know, that we wanted the parishioners to be aware of the fact that sex workers are dying because the law is against prostitution.
Uh-huh.
But we ended up, you know, I'll speak for myself, but there was—I wasn't the only sex worker who was dancing in the aisles at that church service.
Wow!
Because they had amazing music,
mm-hmm.
and it was a Christian church, but the preachers were women,
mm-hmm.
who were very definitely channeling mm-hmm. some pagan energy.
it was Oakland, too.
It was Oakland.
Wow,
we were clapping our hands and singing and dancing. And
the
day to
end violence against sex workers was an idea I came up with, actually.
That's right, you did.
Yeah.
December 17th
yeah,
was your baby.
And I'm so glad. It's like that's actually, you asked me how I feel about pioneering, you know, porn. I don't know. That's nice, but really pioneering, thinking of that idea is like one of my greatest accomplishments because, Robin Hewitt Swap actually carried the idea through because I was like, you know, this would be a great thing to do, but I don't have the time and energy and resources to actually do it. So
yes.
She produced it, and I came. And we did the first visual there in San Francisco. Were you at that one?
I was.
The Green River Killers?
I was.
Yeah, I found it quite moving. But what's happened is now it's like in 32 cities.
It's all over the world.
It's growing. And then I didn't come up with the red umbrella idea, but that's really nice. So last year I did it in Los Angeles. I just want to encourage all the listeners who are listening to this program, if you're listening out there, to come. It's on December 17th. It's the day to end violence against sex workers. And it's a very beautiful, moving thing, and we all need your support and welcome you, whether you're a sex worker or not, or a John or not.
Absolutely. Absolutely. If you want to know where to find mm-hmm. An event on December 17th that's in your city, all you have to go to is swop-usa.org. So that's swop-usa.org. And SWAP always lists all of the events from around the world so that you can find out which one is nearest you. And
there's a list on there of 10 things you can do during that day. So,
yeah,
like you can actually organize a vigil yourself or just do a private vigil alone at home or make a donation to a sex worker organization that helps protect workers or, you know, different things you can do on that day to honor that day. Because, you know, there's somebody's sister, daughter, you know, mother, you know, right. It's like these are real people with real lives and who are, you know, raped and killed and all this. So anyway.
Yeah, absolutely.
Don't deserve it.
As a sex worker, or I guess I consider myself a sex worker because I'm still mm-hmm. making money from the topic of sex, but
mm-hmm.
I'm not working as a prostitute at this point. But mm-hmm. I am very grateful to you for helping to create that day.
Aww.
Because that really helped us to gain more political sway
yeah.
with the city of Oakland when we were trying to get our own serial rapist reported.
Yeah.
We were trying to do a deposition on him.
Right.
And it was really difficult, but that really put things on the map.
Hmm.
It just shifted paradigms as far as politicians went, so that they started going, wow, you're right, people are dying, I guess we're going to have to listen to you.
Right. Oh, good,
yeah.
Good. Well, I remember that day we did it in San Francisco in front of City Hall. People who were stopping by would go, well, what is this? You know, and we'd say, oh, day to end violence against sex workers. And we had an open mic where people could say stuff. And people were just walking by said stuff. They said, you know, I know someone, blah, 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 or, you know, sorry about the Green River Killer, it's horrible, or, you know, they just were very moved. So it's a good thing. So y'all come to this thing on December 17th.
December 17th. It's a great way to do something good for the holidays.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of our listeners, I want to make sure you guys know that this is a live show, and you have an absolutely unique opportunity to talk to Annie Sprinkle. This just doesn't happen every day. So pick up your phone and call in toll-free. If you're in the United States, you can dial 877-876-5227. Once again, that number is 877-876-5227. And if you are in Canada, you can call toll-free at 888-815-8255. 888-815-9756. Once again, that number is 888-815-9756. And Annie is not only an amazing woman, but she's incredibly friendly. So I'm sure any question you have or comment, maybe you just want to call in and tell her how wonderful she is.
Yeah, or if you disagree, I love to hear that too.
Or have a debate.
Yeah. Say the number once again slow.
Huh?
Can you say the number once again slow?
Oh, absolutely. In the United States, it's 877-876-5227.
Okay, so call us.
And in Canada, it's 888-815-9756. And you can also just go to bbsradio.com and click on Station 1. Look for the Shame-Free Zone.
Hmm.
All the numbers are listed there,
That's
too.
That's a nice title, Shame-Free Zone. Well, I have to say the work you've been doing has been just wonderful. I heard you speak at a conference, and it was about what is feminist porn, and I learned so much from that. I thought it was so smart.
That was a while back.
Mm-hmm.
I actually introduced something new in Miami called Sexploration.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to admit, I'm nowhere near approaching your work at all, but it was enough of a hint of your work that somebody mentioned, this reminds me of Annie Sprinkle.
Someone said that about your talk? No,
well,
about your
I was doing like a multimedia presentation where I got up at the podium in a theater.
That's funny.
And talked about prostitution and sex and politics and love and, you know, God and everything else.
We are like-minded in a lot of ways. It's very nice to meet, you know, and in the same tribe with same politics and same thoughts. And
I think with the hooker with the heart of gold thing. But anyway, Annie, what I did was I showed some of my porn while I was talking.
Oh, great.
So there's, you know, a huge screen in the background where I'm female ejaculating, and these people had never seen anything like that before. They were kind of like, all their mouths were, you know, their jaws were dropped.
Yeah, because you have a shame-free zone. When people see people with no shame, like, that's what that public service announcement was really about, was like, I don't have shame about my pussy, I'm just showing it. And people would cry because they realized how much shame they had.
Oh.
Yeah, it was very moving for a lot of people because, you know, for me it's just playful and fun and no big deal.
Right.
And, you know, I have shame about my chocolate chip cookie addiction, but I don't have shame about my pussy.
you know what I realize? I have shame around the hours I keep.
How so?
Oh, because I was born at 3 o'clock in the morning, and I'm very comfortable staying up till 3 o'clock in the morning and then sleeping until 10.
Uh-huh.
And it's so funny because I come from these right-wing Christians who really believe that if you get up at 6 a.m., you will be closer to God.
Oh, wow.
So all it takes is a little teasing, like a boyfriend was teasing me about being an owl. He's like, you have to get up with the eagles or something if you want to soar. And I'm like, well, I'm an owl, honey. I stay up late. But it's just kind of got me how there's actually a little bit of that Puritan work ethic idea that somehow or another the good people are sleeping at night and they're awake when the sun's up.
Wow.
So I have shame issues around it.
Well, your show is awfully early then. No.
I know. It's only 9 o'clock.
Well, I'm so glad it wasn't at 8 in the morning because you wouldn't have got me on it.
This is what I try to explain to people when I'm on the road. I'm going, what part of sex worker don't you understand? We don't usually show our faces until noon.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's kind of, you know, moving into the public speaking arena, same thing, right? Because most people want you to talk at night.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
I'm reading the book Escape about the Mormon wife that escaped with her 8 kids or whatever. And
is that the recent, the one It came out of that Texas cult?
Yeah, the Jessup.
Yeah.
One of the Jessup ones. And it's pretty interesting. Gosh, you know, I always think, oh, polygamy, that sounds great. You know, I think that's pretty cool to have God have a bunch of wives. I don't see anything wrong with that. But it really is, you know, they really sound pretty miserable, the women, you know, because they don't have any say in it. That's the problem.
Well, it's the patriarchal system, right? I mean, male-dominated?
Yeah, you know, they arrange the marriage, and they tell them, like, the day before, 2 days before, you know, you got to go be wife number seven with this guy that's 50 years older than you. And I like older guys, don't get me wrong, but if you're 18, you know.
Well, I think the big part being there, it's not your choice.
Yeah.
That's, So what about spirituality? As we're talking about religion, do you see a difference between religion and spirituality?
Oh, I don't know. I think some religions are very spiritual or have spiritual moments, and some spirituality has religion, and sometimes the two don't meet, I suppose. I'm not an expert, but, you know, I have kind of New Age friends that would say they're spiritual, not religious, but it sure looks like religion to me sometimes. You know, it's like, but
I know exactly what you're talking about. That's the way I feel about most scientists.
Really?
I absolutely think science moved into the dogma business. They were supposed to be about disproving a hypothesis. That was the premise around science, was that you take a hypothesis and then you set about trying to disprove it, and that was supposed to keep the field pure. And there are, in science, there's not supposed to be any facts. You only have hypotheses. But that's not the way they practice it nowadays. They have all kinds of facts and things that they believe in, and as soon as you start having a belief, then you work to defend it.
Yeah, I don't think all that much about science, to tell you the truth. You're off topic for me.
I was interested in how you tie spirituality into sexuality.
Well, for me, sex has always been the most spiritual thing. But also, I think learning a bit about tantric and Taoist and Native American sex techniques, you know, I learned how to make sex more spiritual. And my parents were atheists, so humanist, but atheist, and I wasn't raised to be religious or spiritual, but so I had to kind of learn how to be spiritual, kind of, you know, and so I started studying sex, you know, that was spiritual, and it's like swimming in a pool, you know, you swim a few laps, you're going to feel a little different, so you know, you have these techniques that you can do and to change the energy or the vibration or, you know, make you feel a certain way, and they really work. So, and then once you get spiritual, it's just you feel that, you know, you know, the ego goes, the drops, and you feel that oneness, and you feel, you know, you're in beauty and ecstasy and the rapture, you know, it's all right there.
Absolutely it is. I remember attending one of your events, God, this is probably a good 15 years ago, and it was at Fort Mason in San Francisco. And I'm embarrassed to say I don't remember what the name of the performance was.
Post-porn modernist, where I did the masturbation ritual?
Yes, you did the masturbation ritual, and we all had these little shakers with rice in them.
Yeah, that was post-porn modernist.
Yeah. Oh, it was.
And I did the public service announcement.
You did.
Yeah.
You did, and my husband was terrified. He didn't want to go down.
Oh.
We almost had a fight because he wouldn't go look at your cervix.
It's pretty scary. I understand.
I was...
Oh, I didn't know you saw that.
I did. what really, I mean, I don't know how many people were in that room. It felt like 400.
Yeah, that's a 400-seat theater, Fort Mason, yeah.
And it was just, the energy in that room.
Oh, that's nice. I didn't realize you had been there for that. Yeah, actually, it's the public cervix announcement where I show my cervix is a piece that gets the more attention. But really, it was the sex magic masturbation ritual, which was called The Legend of the Sacred Prostitute, that was much more challenging and, to me, much more interesting and much more provocative, where I'd masturbate on stage.
In front of all these people.
Yeah, and light candles and make prayer. It was kind of tantric, spiritual, sex magic, pagan thing I made up.
It absolutely was. I was just, like, tingling at the end.
Oh, sometimes it got really high, and sometimes it didn't. But that's like regular sex, you know. Sometimes it's really great, and sometimes you feel like a lead balloon.
Well, I felt like you were levitating some people that night.
Well, the Fort Mason was pretty awesome production, actually. You know, a lot depends on the people, where you are. And
it does.
And their energy, because what I would do is circulate the energy with the audience so that, you know, there's this life force energy, and I gave everybody rattles, and I had real intense music, and I would breathe, and I would oil my body and light candles and tell the story of the legend of the sacred prostitute, and then I would, you know, masturbate, and I was, you know, I think I was, you know, at a certain kind of energetic prime in my 30s, and pretty incredible. I would get, you know, I had some, like, probably a dozen full-body energy orgasms, but often I would have little energy orgasms and kriyas and trances, and sometimes I wouldn't, you know. So, and sometimes I had clitoral orgasms, and sometimes I didn't. But I usually had some kind of energy orgasm experience. When I would use a dildo, too, so.
Oh, yeah. Can you explain kriyas to our listeners?
It's kind of an energy hiccup. People get them all the time. Do you ever lay, like you're cuddling with someone and you're relaxing and you're in bed and all of a sudden your body kind of jolts? That's a kriya, isn't it? That would make sense.
It is. You know, I was up in Oregon doing a workshop at summer camp, and
teaching it?
I was.
Uh-huh.
teaching a couple of workshops actually up there, but we had a bunch of us who were into the tantric energetic work, and oh my god, this must have been 6 to 8 of us all got together in a group, and we started playing with each other's chakras and bringing that energy up.
Mm.
And it was interesting because everybody else was having quite a few kriyas, but it was later for me. It was like a delayed reaction after we had stopped doing the energy play and we were just kind of having our little puppy pile, you know, just holding each other. And then I started having kriyas, and I was thinking that it reminded me of when I was a little kid. You know how you would cry yourself till you were just totally spent?
Mm-hmm.
And then you would start snubbing. You'd go, that thing.
Yeah.
I was noticing that this seemed similar to me, and I thought that was kind of odd.
Well, it's the kind of autonomic nervous system doing where you don't really... It's also called bioenergetic. You know, bioenergetic.
Bioenergetic?
Yeah. There's, you know, like, there's, you know, yeah, there's similarities in different versions of that. You know, you could say a kriya is a kind of little energy orgasm. But it's like a hiccup, you know, it's like the body doing its own thing. You don't really, but you can also initiate them. I mean, I could sit here on the phone and have little, you know, if you let yourself.
Yes.
you can have those little jerky things.
Little jerky things.
Like, I just had one, and I got the chills, and I just felt like a tingling in my hand.
Yes.
Really kind of fun, you know, what the body can do. And, of course, there's the yoga version. There's the Native American version. There's the Christian version. You know, everybody has some different names.
Because the basic premise is that we're made out of electricity, right? Or that we all have, like, an energy field. How do you understand that?
Well, that, you know, that's, you know, prana, life force. Energy flow, electricity, you know, there's all different ways to call it. The Chinese said qing qi, which is sexual energy, qing qi.
Say that word again.
Qing qi.
Qing qi?
Qing qi. There's qi.
Yes.
Qi, where you're like karate.
I do qi gong, so
qi gong.
Energy.
So the sexual energy is called qing qi.
Qing qi.
So they're so sophisticated, those Taoist folks. They have different names for different flavors of energy. But I'm not really, you know, a super expert on this stuff. I just picked up a little here and there. I like taking sex workshops and yoga and learning what the body can do.
Do you have a regular meditation practice that you do?
My dog walks.
Your dog walks. That's a great meditation.
I wish I did. I moved to the country and for a couple years, and just being out in nature is kind of a meditation. But no, I wish I did have more of a workout routine. I mean, I ride my bike around and I take walks, but, you know, I could just spend the whole day exercising and pampering and hot tubbing, and but it's not realistic sometimes. As a freelance artist, anyway. Yeah.
I started meditating about a year and a half ago, and I don't do it every single day, but I try to.
Oh, what, transcendental meditation?
No, a friend gave me his chant, and it's in some type of Indian. I'm not even sophisticated to know what kind it is. And I don't know what the individual words mean. It's something like God is great, God is good, and let go.
Can you share the chant? What it sounds like?
I would feel more comfortable emailing it to you.
That's good. That's kind of private thing.
It is. It was shared. It was passed on to
funny.
Me.
We can talk about our orgasms, no problem, but we can. There you go. Spirituality. Like,
I don't mind female ejaculating on the big screen, but,
yeah. But
don't
ask me to tell you my mantra.
Yeah, it's my mantra.
Yeah. So I understand that.
But I really had a hard time with meditation because all I knew was that you did conscious breathing and then you sat there. And I'd been to meditation retreats and I'd, you know, studied them online and in books, and that was as far as I'd gotten. So the chanting really changed things for me. It gave me something to do instead of obsessing about the fact that I was having a hard time clearing my mind of thought.
Oh, I love chanting. Love chanting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could chant all day and all night, too.
Do you have a favorite chant you want to share with our listeners?
I like the Hindu, you know, Sanskrit chants. I mean, I have an Indian thing, you know, I like the tantric Hindu kind of, you know, the Khajuraho temples and the saris and the sensual stuff. They do. But, yeah, anything in Sanskrit, I just get off on. So,
how can our listeners find a Sanskrit chant?
Well, they're all over the place. You know, actually, Krishna Das is one of my... I go into absolute ecstasy with Krishna Das. He's very popular. In fact, on the airplane, they had a whole channel of Krishna Das.
Wow.
Yeah, so...
That was on the airplane to Spain?
No, it was a few airplane rides ago. I can't remember.
Oh, you travel so much.
Yeah.
So DAS, D-A-S-S?
It's not DAS, D-A-S.
Oh.
K-R-I-S-N-A, D-A-S. His beautiful music. So you can get it on iTunes or, you know, we just saw a great Bollywood movie. I love that Bollywood music. It's fun, too. But
Bollywood's
yeah,
taking over Hollywood.
What?
Bollywood is taking over Hollywood.
Is it?
Yeah, I'm not real sure, but I think they just bought a piece of Disney.
Really?
Something like that. Don't quote me on that. I would double check me on Google. But they're actually doing better than it seems like America's having some financial problems right now, and we're just selling things. Selling everything.
Yeah. Are you watching it?
Huh?
Oh, hello?
Yep. Annie?
Yeah, that's trying to call me because a dog just, you know, got sprayed by a skunk and she's trying to find out what happened. Can you hold on?
We're almost.
Okay.
You know, it'd probably be better for us to just wrap up the show.
Oh, okay. Well, she's calling and
we're
calling.
Live, you know.
What?
We're live.
Alive. Oh, yeah, we're live.
This is a live show. You know, yes, they want to put people on hold in the middle of a live radio broadcast.
No, I know. Okay. Well,
Well,
where are they calling? Aren't they calling? Is anyone listening out there?
Oh, they're listening. We have quite a few listeners, but we seem to have shy people who don't want to pick up the phone.
Maybe we lost them when we started talking about, I don't know.
We had a lot of people calling in last week when I was interviewing Maxine Dugan from the Erotic Service Providers Union about decriminalizing prostitution in San Francisco.
Oh.
Phones were ringing off the hook that night.
Oh, wow. Really?
So maybe we have a more political crowd. You're probably just blowing them away.
I don't know. I don't like to know what's happening because I am very weird and eclectic and talk about
which is why I love you.
Things. I'm not, you know, I'm experimental, so
your brain works different than most people.
Mm.
And I totally relate to it because so does mine.
I think that's we relate well to each other. I mean, who else thinks about sex and global warming? And
I know! But
I'm
really
doing,
would, Annie.
A project on, you know, eroticizing the environmental movement and, like, you know, just kind of weird, I guess, to most people.
Oh, it's hard. People like their little boxes, and I see a continuum, but, I mean, you know, I know you said you kind of passed through this stage already. Right now I'm in this stage of making love to the universe and trees and stars and animal. I mean, not actually having sex with animals, but just really connecting with them on an energetic level, which creates this huge sexual spiritual high.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I bring it,
well,
I
didn't say I passed through it.
No,
I wouldn't say I passed through it. I mean, but it's something that's been part of my life, like, for a long time, but I'm not through it. I think I used to teach a workshop called Sacred Sex, you know, at the Wise Woman Center in New York and out in the country, and we used to send all the women to go have sex with something out in nature, a rock or a tree or, you know, waterfall or the sky or whatever. People come back and tell them, they had the best sex of their lives. You know, they come back with these amazing stories of, you know, having sex with something in nature. And I think once you realize the earth is a lover or can be a lover, you know, once you make that connection, it's always going to be there.
It is, but for our listeners, this might be a really hard thing to understand. So can you give them something tangible? Like if you gave somebody an exercise to go out and make love to something in nature, what would that look like? Would they breathe, chant, meditate?
Go through the senses. Smell, look, taste, lick. You know, say there's a flower, you know, like I think it's an attitude, you know, to say yes and open up to the, you know, it's kinky. It's kinky, I know.
But so if you saw a flower and you wanted to make love to it, you would look at it. You'd touch it with your fingers.
Yeah, you'd rub it on your cheek. You might rub it on your clit or your penis. I had a friend who told me a story. He made love with this flower, and every morning he would come out and really connect with this flower, and then had this erotic connection with this flower that was growing outside his house. And then as it started to die, he decided to eat the flower. That's perfect. So.
That's interesting.
But it's through the senses, you know, so like, but also I think, well, once I was in New York City on my bed in the only 11th floor of my apartment and looking out the window, and I just was using my vibrator and I was looking up at the sky and the clouds and this beautiful sky in the daytime. And I just was so moved. I felt so connected with the sky. And I'm like, what am I nuts? This is so kinky, you know. But for me, it was, like, really beautiful. And I said, this is crazy, you know. And I'm like, is this for real? And all of a sudden, then this balloon floated up in the sky. I was like, oh. Right then, when I asked that question, is this for real? There was this balloon. It's kind of this nice sign.
Beautiful.
It's like, wow.
That's totally beautiful. You get balloons, I get shooting stars.
Ooh, really?
Yeah.
That's hot. Oh, that's so hot.
Yeah.
So I'd like to hear from the listeners if they think we're crazy or...
Yeah, really, you guys. You have about 1 minute to call in.
Sex with nature?
Give a buzz. What do you think about this having sex with nature thing? 877-876. 5227 if you're in the U.S. And if you're in Canada, it's 888-815-9756. And if you are too shy to call in, but I don't know why you would be, because, you know, nobody can see who you are. But if you are, feel free to email me or Annie. Would you like to get emails from people?
Sure. They can go to my website, both my websites and my emails there if people want to email me.
Yeah, and
also,
those
you
websites
know, they can
again
see my
for
calendar and go to my calendar at anniesprinkle.org and see if I'm coming to their town or their country. We're having a big green wedding in Zagreb, Croatia, so if anyone wants to come.
And what month is that in?
October 9th.
October 9th, well, that's coming up soon.
Yeah. So
they can find out more about the Love Art Lab and the Green Wedding at loveartlab.org, right?
Word like orgasm. And I think we just talked to Carol Queen today about doing a big Sluts and Goddesses workshop, which I haven't done in years. But
you haven't done those? Oh, my God, I would love to come to that.
Aw, it's fun. It's fun.
Oh, for people who don't know, the Sluts and Goddesses workshop is just awesome. I mean, she helps people dress up like sluts and goddesses and takes photos of them. Oh.
It's very fun. It's using the costumes to explore those two archetypes, the slut and the goddess, and you do it back to back. And so we do real slutty things, and then we do kind of tantric, goddessy, belly dancey, you know, breathing, drumming kind of things, and it's interesting because people always resonate with one or the other, the slut or the goddess, and sometimes people have never tried one or the other, and it's really interesting. It's a great pairing.
Do you think you're going to be doing that in San Francisco?
Yeah, at the Center for Sex and Culture, which is a great place. And I think I might do one also for big women, because big women are often shy about, you know, doing a workshop where you're putting on garter belts and bras and stockings. And,
yeah.
You know, so it might be fun to get big girls together. And also trans people.
Yes.
Yeah.
Anything else you want our listeners to know before we say goodnight, Annie?
Mm,
You've got a new DVD out, right?
Yeah, I've got 4 DVDs. My classic, most favorite films are on DVD, and with lots of extras. And you go to anniesprinkle.org and go to the shop.
Yes,
and you can
I have some of your work, and I just love it.
Thank you.
The one with you in the mermaid outfit, what's that called?
Yeah, that's Annie Sprinkle's Hershey of Porn. It's clips and commentary from, like, all my best and worst films.
Yes.
It's really fun film diary, you know, and it spans 30 years. So if you think you've seen one, you know, porn, you've seen it all, there's many different kinds, and that film has a whole bunch of different kinds.
Absolutely. Now, Annie, your stuff is amazing because it really does fly in the face of convention, and is, you know, I mean, it puts you into whole. You're not only recognized as a performance artist, but as an accomplished artist. So.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
You know, just it's crazy. You know, I wish I was a better. You know, if I was a better businesswoman, I probably wouldn't be so eclectic. You know, but. You know, you got to do what you got to do, and I always find the truth is more sexy than fiction. And
I couldn't agree more. The truth is always better. That's my quote.
Really?
Yeah.
That's a good one.
That's how I autograph all my books.
Oh, really? The truth is always better.
The truth is always better.
I say the truth will set you free.
I've had a lot of people argue with me on that.
Yeah, the truth will set you free. Yeah, it's like it's when it comes to sex, it's always better to tell the truth.
It is.
You know, in a nice way, of course.
Annie, I'm going to let you go.
Okay.
Take care of that poor little dog who got the skunk spray in his face.
Oh, I think he's okay. And
okay.
So nice talking to you, and I'm sorry no listeners called.
Well, it's their lost doll, but I'm sure that the people who are listening enjoyed it just the same. They got to hear all from you, and they didn't have to listen to any of those other people, so I'm sure they're happy.
Oh, wow. All the best.
Thanks, Annie. I love you very much.
Love you. Bye-bye.
Travel safely, my dear.
Good night.
Good night.
Monet offers help, healing, and hope in the form of private telephone sessions. Email Veronica at sexwithoutshame.com to schedule an appointment, or visit www.sexwithoutshame.com to find out what Veronica can do for you.
Be the biggest little flirt. Well, I might have to break someone's heart.